Because yesterday evening we spoke about the process of hearing, and we also heard two of Queen Kunti's prayers. I thought to continue in the series of Queen Kunti's prayers. She was, what we read yesterday, she was discussing reasons why some people say that Krishna appeared. Some say this, some say this, some say that. But Krishna gives by his pastimes. He's fulfilling the meaning of his name, Krish. He attracts the hearts and the minds of living entities that are in this material world back to the spiritual world, and provides them subject matters for hearing and chanting. So she finishes that section with the verses that we read. Now she's beginning another section. After meeting, then there's separation. And there's little separations, and then there's big separations. And the big separation is Krishna's leaving the world. But that's not about to happen. He's about to leave Hastinapur. In the Brihad Bhagavatamrita, there's two parts. And the first part is Narada Muni is searching for who is the greatest recipient of Krishna's mercy, or the recipient of the greatest portion of Krishna's mercy. And when he's visiting Hanuman, he's convinced he's so dear to Lord Ram. Who can be more dear to Lord Ram than Hanuman? And he goes to visit Hanuman, and Hanuman says, no. How can Ramchandra love me? He returned to Ayodhya with millions of his associates and he left me behind. I could have gone with him, but he left me here without his association. But it's right, because I'm just an animal. And I'll just make some offense. If you want to know who the greatest recipient of the Lord's mercy, the Pandavas, they're always with Krishna. Wherever he appears in this world, in any of his Bhoma Leela, the Pandavas are there. So intimately connected with Krishna. I want to go with you. Let's go. But no. I'll just make some offense. I'll do some monkey-like thing and disturb the royal assembly. Let me just stay here in solitude and think of Ram. You go. So Narada went. And when Narada reached Hastinapur, you know what the Pandavas were doing? They were making a plan. Should we have a calamity? Should we get involved in some battle? And so what should we do so that Krishna will come? Because Krishna's gone back to Dwarka. They were thinking this way, they were thinking that way, how to get Krishna to come. Like Kunti. Her wish is, which is better, to have the kingdom or to have calamity? When we have calamity, Krishna comes. Let's think of a calamity to happen. So Krishna will come, because we just want Krishna's association. Now the kingdom is nicely restored. Yudhisthira has become the king. Everything is nice. So Krishna's leaving. Awful. So that's where her attention is turning right now. Her apprehension, because the situation is not just perhaps maybe. Krishna, it's really imagined a pageantry movie where the whole of the royal family from Dwarka, the whole Yadu dynasty, is now departing. They're in the big grand square, and the palace is over there, and the chariots are assembled, and all the horses, and all the soldiers, and all the government officers, and everyone's there to see Krishna off. And because she's Queen Kunti, she has privileges, so she just worked her way right through the crowd and came right in front of Krishna, pleading with him, please don't go. Stop. Don't leave us. So here's two of her anticipation of separation prayers to Krishna. Oh my Lord, you have executed all duties yourself. You are leaving us today. Though we are completely dependent on your mercy and have no one else to protect us. Now, when all kings are in enmity with us, she's saying, although Yudhisthira has become the king, for Yudhisthira to become the king, so many other kings were killed, and their dynasties and the followers of their kingdom, they're now having ill feeling, enmity. So yes, Yudhisthira has the throne, but it's not over yet. Krishna, don't go. We're in big difficulty. And Srila Prabhupada's purport. The Pandavas are most fortunate because with all good luck, they are entirely dependent on the mercy of Krishna. In the material world, to be dependent on the mercy of someone else is the utmost sign of misfortune. But in the case of our transcendental relation with the Lord, it is the most fortunate case when we can be completely dependent on Him. The material disease is due to thinking of becoming independent of everything. But the cruel material nature does not allow us to be independent. The false attempt to become independent of the stringent laws of nature is known as material advancement of experimental knowledge. This whole material world is moving on this false attempt of becoming independent of the laws of nature, beginning from Ravana, who wanted to prepare a direct staircase to the planets of heaven. Down to the present age, they are trying to overcome the laws of nature. They are trying to approach distant planetary systems by electronic mechanical power. But the highest goal of human civilization is to work hard under the guidance of the Lord and become completely dependent on Him. The highest achievement of perfect civilization is to work with valor, but at the same time depend completely on the Lord. It's hard to put those two things together. Depend completely upon the Lord. And to work hard with valor. Because those that do so work hard. What's the inspiration? Or what's the psychology? It's in America, for decades and generations, it's been called the Protestant ethic. You heard that one before? Work hard. Protestant ethic. And God will fulfill your pious desires. Just work hard. Be a nice mood, huh? Because within Protestantism, a little European history, the Catholic Church was the dominant church, and there was a hierarchical structure. God's mercy came through Christ, and Christ's mercy came through others through the church. And without too much of the history, one of the issues for the Protestants was that the church became corrupt. That is to say, the term was selling indulgences. Have you heard that before? You know what indulgence is? It's like excessive. You indulge in alcohol or indulge in something immoral. And so that's a sin. And so there's a process in Christianity of atoning for one's sin, and one atones for one's sin by the process of confession. You go to the priest hears your confession of your sins, and the priest then tells you, say certain prayers, put something in the hundi box, and it's okay. So it got to be like a business, selling indulgences. Go ahead and do your sins. Come over here. We'll give you a little receipt. And you're free from your reactions of your sins. Next. And it became part of the psychology of the priests. Something like those that Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur described it this way. Those who see the deity as the means of my family maintenance. I worship the deity, people come and give something to the deity, and I take the money from the deity and maintain my family. And oh, by the way, I'll give something to the deity. He compared that mentality to using Shalagram Shila for cracking open a walnut. Meaning, my maintenance, the sustenance is inside the walnut, so I'll use the Shila to break the shell of the walnut. Horrible mentality. And so the one of the Catholic priests saw that was going on. He understood it was going on. And he stood outside the church and protested. This is corruption. I'm not going with this program. One can get release from sin, and one can get the mercy of Christ without these intermediaries. You can have a direct relationship with God. You don't need these corrupt people. So they broke away. John Wesley formed the Wesleyan ministry, and that became, you know, there's some colleges named after him. And then others and others and others and different branches of... So just work hard in an honest way and you'll get the mercy of God. And many persons came to America from, you know, being frustrated with the Anglican Church, the Church of England, and came and they started their own branch and variety of Christianity. And with the Christian ethic, they established colonies. And so that's where that term comes from. And Prabhupada speaks very strongly about not wasting one's time and energy working hard simply for some material gain, some fruitive activity. to be an enjoyer of the material world. Life is not meant for that. Life is meant, accept the necessities. I was just hearing this during my prasadam at lunch today. The human form of life is not meant for living like that. The human form of life is meant accepting, using intelligence not for advancing in sophisticated forms of material enjoyment. Same things as animals do in a more sophisticated way. Skipping the detail. That's not what the purpose of human life is. It's not the human intelligence, it's not the human mission. But it's very easy to do that. And instead, it's not, advocacy is not have a lazy life. The advocacy is accept one's necessities by the arrangements of God. He was saying that animals don't accumulate things. If there's a squirrel and there's a bunch of something, they'll eat, or bird, they'll eat. They don't get a bag and put a whole bunch of, oh, look at all this, and save this for tomorrow. They take and they come back the next day, and if it's gone, they'll go somewhere because there's some arrangement of nature. So human life is similarly meant for aiming at the higher purpose of life, taking care of the necessities. Now, one time I heard Prabhupada directly in his presence say, if there's one thing I can say about myself, I was never lazy. So he was speaking against being lazy. Being brahminical or being detached from excesses of material pleasures and working hard to achieve them, that detachment from that kind of work doesn't mean detachment from, he says in two successive sentences, I'll read them. The highest goal of human civilization is to work hard under the guidance of the Lord and become completely dependent on Him. The highest achievement of perfect civilization is work with valor, but at the same time depend completely on the Lord. Valor is not the same as working hard. Valor is, where's our dictionary? Valor means?
Like with proper integrity.
Proper integrity. Yeah. It's like a valor is when there's a combat. It's like chivalry. Valorous. Chivalrous. Like, yay! You know, like very challenging or vigorous spirit in activity. Kind of like valor is a term that goes well with a kshatriya. So be very enthusiastic and determined. It's not too far away from ardent from last evening. Valorous in your activity, but completely dependent upon Krishna. Like Hanuman, or like the Pandavas, or like Queen Kunti. She wasn't Kshatriya, she's the mother of the Pandavas and the wife of Pandu. But she was very strong. And Draupadi, my goodness. Sako to Jayadrath. Level the guy. Big warrior. Draupadi was strong. When the Pandavas, there's descriptions when the Pandavas came back and ruled in the palace, Draupadi was like their temple commander. For our ISKCON perspective, she ran around and made sure everyone was doing everything. She was good, but fully dependent upon Krishna. She showed she was fully dependent upon Krishna. in multiple situations. And Queen Kunti, as exalted as she is, she's feeling, what's the use of this so-called exaltedness without you? Feeling dependent upon Krishna and acting with strength and vigor in one's activities of devotional service, they go very well together. This is making me think of the first time I went to Jagannath Puri with a group of devotees. We had a yatra in Puri for some number of days, week, 10 days. I came away from that experience feeling with two very strong feelings about Lord Chaitanya and his associates and his pastimes in Puri. It's very similar to this message. The devotees, the pastimes of Lord Chaitanya in Jagannath Puri were the most elevated pastimes. He exhibited states of love of God that have never been heard of before. His bodily transformations and his exhibitions of love of God, unknown. And there's a reason why that, because he was none different than Krishna in the mood of Srimati Radharani and Radharani's separation. As Kunti is feeling separation, the separation of Radharani was devastating. So, and the associates of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in that condition also, so elevated. The elevated state of their love manifested in two ways. Intense expectation for meeting Krishna. And incredible, totally out of this world degrees of humility. One after the next, after the next, after the next, after the next of Lord Chaitanya's associates. Haridas Thakur, Rupa Goswami, Sanatan Goswami, even King Prataparudra. Some of you may have seen that painting, King Prataparudra, the king, not just sweeping the street in front of Lord Jagannath. He had an artist commissioned to make a painting of himself with Lord Chaitanya. And the painting was all the devotees seated by the side of Narendra Sarovar with Gadadhar Pandit reciting Srimad Bhagavatam, and behind him Lord Chaitanya, Lord Nityananda, and on the other side was Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya and Advaita Acharya and all the elevated associates of Lord Chaitanya, Jagannath, Jagadananda Pandit, and so on. And there's Prataparudra Maharaj, prostrated obeisances, flat, like a rod, dandavats, prostrated before the whole assembly of the devotees as they were hearing Srimad Bhagavatam. That's the pose that he had commissioned an artist to portray. Think of other kings, how they've had themselves artists commissioned to make some very, you know, macho, opulent something, portrait of themselves. Prataparudra Maharaj, paying obeisances before everyone. That was his mood. But how intense was his desire to achieve the association of Lord Chaitanya? He was ready to give up everything, give up his kingdom, give up his life, become a mendicant. Who cares for all of this royal opulence and royal position without the association of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu? Just once. His association. So, strong expectation to achieve, like, you know, when you chant your japa in the morning. How strong is the expectation to hear the holy name, be strongly situated in hearing Krishna as you pronounce the sound of his name, and be in your relationship with Krishna as a result. How strong and how humble are we entering into that activity? So Queen Kunti is very elevated, but she's feeling herself completely dependent. And this is perfection. She's speaking of herself in a very demeaning manner. How is it possible for persons like me to understand you, when the great sages and rishis and renunciates and the most elevated persons, they can't understand? How can I understand? But she understands. She understands much more than probably will ever understand. But she's not feeling, oh, I understand so much. There's so many other people that don't understand what I understand. That's not that's the sign of one who is elevated in spiritual consciousness. So she's teaching us by her own example. And so is Prabhupada in the purport. The Pandavas were ideal executors of this standard of civilization. Undoubtedly, they were completely dependent on the goodwill of Lord Sri Krishna, but they were not idle parasites of the Lord. They were highly qualified, both in personal character and by physical activities. Still, they always looked to the mercy of the Lord, because they knew that every living being is dependent by constitutional position. Again, he says, the perfection of life is, therefore, to become dependent on the will of the Lord, instead of becoming a falsely independent in the material world. So here is that anatta and sanatta phrase. Those who try to become independent of the Lord are called anatta, without any guardian, whereas those who are completely dependent on the will of the Lord are called sanatta, those having someone to protect them. Therefore, we must try to become sanatta so that we can always be protected from the unfavorable condition of material existence. By the deluding power of the external material nature, we forget that the material condition of life is the most undesirable perplexity. The Bhagavad Gita, therefore, directs us, 7:19, that after many, many births, one fortunate person becomes aware of the fact that Vasudeva is all in all, and that the best way of leading one's life is to surrender unto him completely. That is the sign of a Mahatma. All the members of the Pandava families were Mahatmas in household life. Maharaj Yudhisthira was the head of these Mahatmas, and Queen Kunti Devi was the mother. The lessons of the Bhagavad Gita and all the Puranas, specifically the Bhagavad Purana, are therefore inevitably connected to the history of the Pandava Mahatmas. For them, separation from the Lord was just like the separation of a fish from water. Srimati Kunti Devi therefore felt such separation like a thunderbolt. And the whole prayer of the Queen is to try to persuade the Lord to stay with them. After the Battle of Kurukshetra, although the inimical kings were killed, their sons and grandsons were still there to deal with the Pandavas. It is not only the Pandavas who are put into the condition of enmity, but all of us are always in such a condition. And the best way of living, for the sixth time in the purport, is to become completely dependent on the will of the Lord, and thereby overcome all difficulties of material existence. Well, it's a nice phrase, but like yesterday's discussion, yes, this is nice, and then we take two steps and we're back to where we were. Yeah, I'll be independent. I'll work hard and forget Krishna, and then everything will be all right. I'll just be pious. I won't do things sinful, and I'll treat people nicely. I'll work very hard and get back to Godhead. That's not back to Godhead. That's material consciousness that binds one to the material world. Although we can understand the necessity, the reality, the absolute reality of being dependent, feeling dependent consistently in all steps of activity while we're working very vigorously. It seems like opposites. That was one of the things that struck me after this visit to Puri. Abject humility. Intense longing. It's like the same thing Rupa Goswami speaks about. It's his, described in Nectar Devotion, Asha Bandha, hope against hope. Oh, my dear Lord, I have no qualification. And yet, despite the fact I have no qualification, I'm calling to you for your mercy. And in fact, I'm shameless for asking for your mercy because I have but disqualification. But it's my only hope. And so hope, I'm hoping against hope that you're merciful to me. Although I have no qualification. Humility and enthusiasm, spiritual enthusiasm, may seem to be contradictory. They're not. They're a perfect fit. Being very enthusiastic, but not passionate enthusiastic, humble enthusiastic. Completely dependent enthusiasm. That's fantastic. That's the standard. One more verse is similar. Oh, Gadadhar, Krishna, our kingdom is now being marked by the impressions of your feet. Whoops. Sorry. Go back one verse. As the name and fame of a particular body is finished with the disappearance of the living spirit, similarly, if you do not look upon us, all our fame and activities, along with the Pandavas and the Yadus, will end at once. If you leave, what is there? You're the life of the body, as the body has life because the presence of the soul. If you leave, everything, our position, our fame, our strength, our capacity, everything's gone. You're the life of our life. Shorter purport. Kunti Devi is quite aware that the existence of the Pandavas is due to Sri Krishna only. The Pandavas are undoubtedly well established in name and fame and are guided by the great King Yudhisthira, who is morality personified, and the Yadus are undoubtedly great allies. But without the guidance of Lord Krishna, all of them are non-entities. As much as the senses of the body are useless without the guidance of consciousness, no one should be proud of his prestige, power, and fame without being guided by the favor of the Lord. The living beings are always dependent, and the ultimate dependable object is the Lord Himself. We may therefore invent, by our advancement of material knowledge, all sorts of counteracting material resources, but without being guided by the Lord, all such inventions end in fiasco. However strong and stout the reactionary elements may be, don't build your kingdom at the edge of the ocean may build your sandcastle, spending hours and years and eons building something that is simply by time and tide going to be washed away. We need to do those things that are essential, do those things that are essential for Krishna. But the mission of life is just slips through one's fingers if at the end of life there's no Krishna. Thinking of the last time I went to Penn State from New York, I go by train. Travel is a nice way to meet Krishna's messages about life. So this one was, I was on an aisle seat, and in front of me, the opposite side of the aisle seat was a gentleman that could hardly walk, older gentleman. And, he had glasses, then he had like lenses that flipped down over those glasses, then he had another set of glasses so he could like read his book. And then we had to talk to people, had to lift up both flaps of glasses just so he could see them. And he could hardly walk. He had to be helped into the train. It took him 10 minutes just to sit in his seat. And he took an interest in, I was sitting on the other side, so he was lonely, he wanted to talk. He struck up a conversation and started speaking and on about his medical career. And as he was going on and 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 about, my wife was religious and I was born like this and she was like that, and I said, okay, I'll become like that, and I never really went to church, and on and on and on, and never really God never meant anything to me, is what he was telling me. And, my sons, I'm going to visit my sons, and, they live in such and such place, and, they're really, they're football fanatics, and I like football, and, on and on and on. And, the train of life was taking to a place, it was destination unknown. And I was thinking, as I was listening, I wasn't speaking much of anything, listening to the man. Prabhupada saved me. Because I remember that at the early stage of looking at a medical career, and thinking, I don't want to be at the end of the conveyor belt of life and don't know who I am and don't know who is God and my relationship with Him. I don't want to be there. So I put on the brakes and said, I'm getting off this conveyor belt and I want to find out who I am. What's the purpose of life? I can get back on the conveyor belt once I know the answer to those questions, but I'm not getting on the conveyor belt. And here's a man that never got off the conveyor belt. And there he was. It was sad. I mean, his intellect was keen in one sense. He was able to, talk about all kinds of subject matters. And on and on and on and on. The book he was reading. Where's his destiny? Where's that soul going to go? It's almost like, Dhritarashtra. Except, you know, where's Uncle Vidura to tell Dhritarashtra that, you know... But there was no training in his whole life. There was academic training. He was a surgeon. He was like an accomplished surgeon. Told me all about it. How many surgeries he did and how much money he made and how many da-da-da-da-da-da he had. And but, you know, so many zeros. Very sad. This message of Srimad Bhagavatam, the message of Krishna, Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam, message of Krishna consciousness, providing this training for young devotees and for us, because we can't train young devotees without that capacity ourselves, and show example, by example, here's how a life of devotion to Krishna is led. As the mother that looks after the house and the husband that goes to work and all the things that family life is made up of, and the children are seeing the nice example and the nice qualities and the higher purpose, and they can build their lives with that example. And here's Queen Kunti, the mother, who's showing us by her example and her deep, deep attachment and dependency upon Krishna. And her sons, highly qualified, but feeling themselves completely dependent upon Krishna. So, we may have some degree or some sense of dependence upon Krishna, especially when something hurts. We lose something, or something bad happens, or something, the rug gets pulled out from under us and we're flying around, crash to the ground, and Krishna. But just in day-to-day life, feeling dependent upon Krishna, that's Krishna consciousness. Whether it's business as usual or calamity, feeling dependent upon Krishna. And working very vigorously for our service to Krishna, because we want to please Him. That's our life. And we have role models here in the Bhagavatam to help us stay on that path. Just continue to hear and be inspired by them. Follow their nice example. Okay, any discussion or questions?
In the purport you were reading, it was like the horrible mentality of maintaining the deities for one's own sustenance.
I spoke about that from Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati. It wasn't from the purport.
During the visit to Vrindavan, it was like very painful to see such a thing happening in that holy dam. And at the same time, it gave me the warning bell of the nature of this material world, where things can degrade even to that level. My question, the souls are like elevated souls. They are piety and they have got that wonderful opportunity, and still they couldn't come out of that influence of that is there anything compelling there, or what causes that kind of
what causes? You know the math? The fruits of piety plus an impure heart equals pride. Supposing somebody doesn't want to have a pure heart. And they're born into a situation of piety, surrounded by a situation of piety. Nalakovira and Manigriva, classic. They were actually elevated, but their hearts weren't pure. To take such a birth, it's elevated, but their hearts weren't pure. So what should our lesson from that is, whatever it is we have or don't have, let our heart become pure. And part of our heart becoming pure is feeling gratitude, not pride, over as a result of mercy that we have received. Something else? Yes?
I'm not sure if I'm clear in my question. It's about the feeling dependent on Krishna's mercy or self-sufficiency.
Okay.
I feel like even after getting so many smashes of not being able to do anything on my own, and sometimes it's very clear that without Krishna's representative intervening, it's not possible for me to do anything about it. But still, that independent mentality is so much, it's coming out almost all the time, and it's like, feels like...
Welcome to the club. There are many persons around you that are going, yes, that's right. Yeah. And therefore?
What should I apply to myself, like, how should I apply myself to at least feel a little bit...
Well, this seems to be the theme question during this visit. Stated in different ways, but here's one. Read the prayers of Queen Kunti, or hear the narrations of persons who exemplify that which is free from the false sense of independence. Practically speaking, any great Vaishnava, this is a teaching of Ramanujacharya that I like very much, which is how to develop Vaishnava qualities. That is, the recommendation he offers is just what I just paraphrased. You take some great personality that really inspires you, and read about that personality, hear about that personality, remember that personality, speak about the personality, pray to that personality, become absorbed in the character of that personality. And by that association, that quality becomes your quality. Because, you know... they're up here and I'm looking up to them down here. Here's another. I've shared this before. You probably heard this before. Something that I learned from Sridhar Swami. Your question specifically is feeling oneself not independent, but dependent. But the feeling of oneself independent is pride. I have something, I can do something, I'm independent. I don't need to be dependent. So, a sense of curbing pride and curbing the false sense of independence is to take the position of pridelessness and the menial servant. So, I mentioned yesterday evening about Dravida and Prahladananda Swami reciting chapter after chapter from the 10th canto of Bhagavatam from memory. So in that same Navadvip Parikrama, the arrangement they had was the sannyasis would stay together in one space, and brahmacharis would stay in one place, and the ladies would stay in another place, and so they, because we had different campsites every night. And they put all the, you know, the sleeping bags and mosquito nets and whatever we have in a big truck, so that somebody would unload the truck, and then we'd take our stuff and put it, you know, set up our mosquito net. This was my fault. So I went to get my stuff, and my stuff wasn't there, and I saw my stuff was inside the place where we were to stay, and Shridhar Swami was setting up mosquito nets. I said, Maharaj, what are you doing? You're our senior. And he said, I'm just trying to serve the Vaishnavas. And I pushed it a little further and said, yeah, we're all trying to serve the Vaishnavas, and we want to serve you, so please allow me to serve you. And he pulled out of his pocket a 3x5 card and showed it to me. He said, see this? You know, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. He said, I've been doing this for the past 5 years or 4 years or something like that. I recognized I have this tendency to be proud. And so to help cure me of that tendency that I have for pride, I made a commitment, a vow to myself that every day, 5 times, 1, 2, 3, 4, and I keep track of it. And where others wouldn't know, because he shared this with me, because we stayed together in the York Temple, and you know, we had, otherwise I don't think he would have shared it with me. To go out of my way consciously just serving another person in a humble way, to curb my tendency for pride. So, in a similar manner, think of, if it's something that you feel is like really fundamental and really something you need to pay attention to, then put something on the other side of the pan scale and consciously place yourself in that position. You know, with some regulation to it. A commitment, and then keep the commitment. He was keeping this commitment for years. 4 or 5 years. It was amazing. And then had the card to prove it. You know, there it was. And he would do it in such a way others wouldn't see. It wasn't for getting recognition. Oh, you're such a humble Vaishnava. Yes, yes, I'm such a humble Vaishnava. It was for his purification. Another is the very feeling that you expressed for a Vaishnava, regret, is purification. And then, so that you, when you, that you recognize, there I go again, then that's, you know, you're closer to not going there again with some feeling of regret. And another, this is number 4, you keep very close relationships with those who are guiding you in Krishna consciousness. And, you know, the understanding between you and that person can become so strong that they just have to go like that and you understand. Or, you know, one of those or something, without, you know, a whole long story, because you've been through it. You know, just like, you know, some little signal that says, oh, I'm doing it again, huh? Okay. Then you hit the reset button. So holding ourselves accountable to someone who's helping us in our Krishna consciousness and having such a strong relationship that our tendencies can be checked That's very helpful. Very helpful. It's a strength beyond our own limited strength. All of those that I gave examples of. Anyone else? Okay.
Yeah, this is continuing today's topic. In terms of sustaining the dependency on Krishna, or working hard for Krishna, everyday life, for me it's like a material. It's sometimes it goes, you know, it's basically goes up and down.
Yeah.
And then, you know, like, I have to push myself and then come back. Then, without my knowledge, it goes back once again, up and down, up and down. So, probably I would have asked this question many times.
It's the same question that's being asked four times already. Just a different way of asking the same question.
Yeah, so technically sustaining, I just want to understand.
That's your question, right? Same question. You were there yesterday evening, right?
Yesterday evening?
Yeah. Day before yesterday.
I was there, yeah.
Okay. I'm thinking, my days are a blur for me. Day before yesterday.
So basically what happens is that when you, even if you have the surrounding, when you get into the surrounding, get absorbed in the surrounding, and then this takes the precedence in the back. So you have to really push yourself.
Well, do you have to really push yourself, or do you have to just really surrender to Krishna? One can easily cross beyond it. It's the surrendering to Krishna. There's some sentence in here that specifically was describing the effect of material conditioning. Anyway, rather than searching for that sentence. Yeah, it's that the pushing yourself is to, like, you put it in a different phrase. Enter into the realm of the mode of goodness. And that's more of a pause than pushing yourself. Reflective. Okay, here I am again. Feeling independent, or here I am again, something, you know, not that which I know I wish to be in a spiritual perspective, whether it's in the home or in a workplace or with whatever you, wherever you are, you know, chanting your japa or something. Reflective. Then in that reflective state, where am I? Who am I? What's going on? Reaching out to Krishna with some that's the pushing yourself is can be perhaps more effectively feeling Krishna's pull, feeling the attractiveness of Krishna and being attracted to that. Yeah, to the goal. Then the striving isn't hard. It's not like, you know, an endurance marathon or something where you just have to keep pushing yourself until you cross the finish line. It's not like that. It's a different mode. I'm explaining it like this because it's important. It is like this. It's different. I work very hard. And ask anybody that's been around. I work very hard. Not, you know, so it's not an appeal against, you know, applying yourself as the verse purport said, work vigorously. But the pushing of yourself is a different kind. When you're attracted to pleasing your spiritual master in Krishna, it's easy to work hard. So that something else may seem attractive, that more than that, better is reflective than pushing yourself. I find, anyway, mode of goodness is more powerful than like struggling against some other attraction. Wait a minute, what's going on? This is just a conditioned state. And this conditioned state is, it's factually illusion. It's not me. I know it's not me. And yet that attraction, that conditioning is there. But I'm choosing in a reflective, conscious manner, I'm choosing to not go there. I'm going to choose to go there. That's not pushing. It's attraction. It's love. It's fun. It's happy. And the other is just like, hey, what about me? I'm going here.
Small, yeah. When I said pushing, I was trying to say, my implication was practice. When you practice, it becomes second nature. So I was just thinking, whenever I deviate, think about and then try to, you know, push myself in the sense of practice, hey, you're not doing this.
Okay.
You have to go here. So I just want to.
Okay. Yeah. Well, the intelligence has to be operative. The part of the problem is we have material intelligence along with spiritual intelligence. And sometimes we mistake our material intelligence, like we figure something out and get all caught up and convinced in what our material intelligence is telling us. You know what I'm talking about? Okay. Because I see it happen all the time. And we know better. But the Bhav, Ishvara Bhav, is really strong. And we, you know, we want to be on top of it and be right. And it's really hard. It's tricky. Okay, does that cover your question?
Yeah, thank you.
Mother Kunti's wanting of Krishna prior to this scene, what you just described, like when they were going, while they were going through the tribulations, it's not because of Aarti, she was praying prior to.
It's not because of.
Because of the distress, she was wanting Krishna. It was not like that. My question is like, was she already situated in the perfect?
I have to like translate your questions before I can answer them. So let me say it back. Are you asking, minus the tribulation, was she also having deep feelings for Krishna?
Yes.
And that the tribulation caused another kind of deep feeling for Krishna, that after the tribulation was gone, there's still deep feeling for Krishna.
Yeah.
That's your question?
Yes.
Yes. Her understanding, however, specifically, is observing Krishna's coming and Krishna's going. Krishna would come when we would have tribulation. So, let the tribulations come. Because I want Krishna's association. And not just her, her sons were thinking the same way. So how do you like tribulations? Whatever, whether it's tribulation, no tribulation, our teaching, our practice, our cultivation is to become attached to Krishna. It's nice to chant Krishna's holy name, feeling very peaceful and connected to Krishna. The other kind is also nice. You have something more?
Yes. Like, now, because of the dependence, feeling the dependence, complete dependence on Krishna. Like
you or Queen Kunti is?
Queen Kunti.
Okay.
And that means she is not considering herself or the welfare of her sons, like that kind of stuff is gone. Like,
She's concerned about the welfare of her sons. She's a mother. But she knows what the welfare of her sons are. Krishna. And that's in the next verse.
Okay, let's take two types of persons.
Two types of persons.
One is a lazy person.
One is a what person?
Lazy person.
A lady person?
Lazy.
Oh,
lazy
person.
Yeah, lazy
I knew
person.
What you said, I was just teasing you.
A lazy person.
Yeah,
lazy person who is just coming to temple or coming, sitting and participating in the devotional activities.
Okay.
But his concentration is not there. He's
okay.
Just coming and laying his body.
I don't know anybody like that, do you? Go ahead, keep going.
And there is another person who lost everything.
He lost everything
and do not have anything to do. And he is also coming and sitting and just doing some kind of time pass and not...
Some kind of what?
Time pass,
okay.
And no concentration.
Okay.
And,
where's this question going? And a big truck comes in and hits the no, go ahead.
Will they get any kind of mercy or piety?
Sure. Anyone else? Yes. They by... Svalpam apyasya dharmasya. Even alpa. Little. Very powerful. So, this person, that person, if they've come to the temple, one is like not present and the other is just wasting time. And just like wrapped in their sorrows. But they've come before Krishna. That's a step. That's beneficial. And whatever are the other things, they hear, they see, they taste, they, you know, receive some of Krishna's mercy. Beneficial. You don't mind my teasing you, do you? Okay. Hare Krishna. Yes.
Guru Maharaj, sometimes due to conditioned nature, if I speak harshly to someone, or...
You're so gentle and mild. Most of the time.
And if I feel that I have offended them, even though they might not have taken as an offense, but I am feeling inside that I have offended, I shouldn't have behaved like this.
Mm.
And then feeling guilty and praying, Krishna, I made a mistake, please punish me, little punishment, something like that. I was thinking inside. And it happens sometimes, yes.
He punishes?
Yes. And is that right way to do, Maharaj, or is there a better way?
Yeah, there's a better way. The first part is good. Regret. Recognize and regret. But then, if there is someone who you have spoken harshly to, the next step is you go to that person. Isn't it? That's our teaching. My dear Prabhu, I'm feeling, I spoke, it wasn't right. I'm feeling great regret. You don't have to forgive me, but I'm asking you, please forgive me. You go right to the person. Panja kalpa dhruvyascha kripa sindhu vyevacha. Like that. Vaishnavebhyo namo namaha. That's our teaching. So the first two parts are fine. Then go to that Vaishnava. Is there any yeah but? Okay. Okay. Sampat, you have something.
One is when we have some discretionary time, like when driving or when we're meeting somewhere.
When you're driving somewhere?
When you're driving somewhere and when you're standing in a line or waiting.
Yeah.
What is the best form of purification?
Best form of purification.
Yeah, chanting the Mahamantra that time or taking an MP3 player and listen, which is more purifying?
One or the other, not both. Wherever you can concentrate, what do you find you can concentrate better? Probably this one, right?
I got inspired when you mentioned that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu instructed the Kuma Brahmana that continuous chanting is chant continuously.
Okay.
I like that.
Okay, fine. Wherever you can concentrate. Fine. Standing in line, you can concentrate chanting. I can understand the driving part, but standing in line, I have a hard time standing in line concentrating.
Not on gates.
Oh, in your mind?
Chanting
softly.
Softly.
Okay. Fantastic. Fantastic. Yes?
I'm kind of new to this group. It may be silly to ask this question. Like as you were saying, you know, in this today's world, being nice to people, sometimes they take us for granted. So, how to avoid
it? How to avoid others' behavior? You have no control over others' behavior.
If you're being like really nice, you know, not saying things.
Okay, so supposing you're being really nice and the other person is taking you for granted.
Yeah.
Continue to be really nice. Don't worry about, you know, their purification is their project, not yours. Now, if you're being really nice with the expectation, I want something back, that's your problem. But their behavior and, you know, how they're conducting their life in relation to Krishna and the devotees, that's their purification. Yours is let amanina manadena kirtaniya sadhari. That statement of Lord Chaitanya in his Shikshastakam is one was ready to offer all respects to others without any expectation of respect in return. In such a state of mind, one can chant the holy name of the Lord constantly. It's mercantile or business. I do this, you give that. I'll be nice, you be nice. If you don't be nice, you broke the contract. I'm taking my business elsewhere. But it's a relationship. Ultimately, the relationship is with Krishna. And the being something that's pleasing to Krishna is so that Krishna is pleased. So supposing you're being nice and another person isn't. Is Krishna pleased with you if you're being nice? Even more so if someone is not, but you're still being nice. Because you're thinking of Krishna. You can't do that if you're not thinking of Krishna. That's the trick. That behavior, whatever it is that you do, yad karoshi, yad asnasi, yad jahosi, whatever you do, do that as an offering unto Krishna, a way of worshipping Krishna. Tatkarashva mad arpanam. Arpana means worship. That you're being nice, be offered to Krishna. If you're in that consciousness, you're not only doing something nice, but you're better than that. You're being Vaishnava Sangha for another person. And by that association, they can get spiritual benefit, not just you're being nice. And as they get spiritual benefit, spiritual benefit, spiritual benefit, that can lift them out of their whatever it is that they're struggling with that's causing them to be other than nice. You're doing a service, a spiritual service in addition to the other one. That's the essence. That's yoga. Link with the Supreme. And if you're not linked with the Supreme, then it's all about, you know, win-lose. Yeah. Exactly. Exactly. Enthusiasm shouldn't be
passionate.
Passionate, yeah.
Sometimes I feel very enthusiastic, not to do to service or anything. So, but also I have the strong tendency to achieve, to overdo, and all these are there in me. So, how do I really know, like, if my enthusiasm is over passion? Means after knowing, and what are the remedial steps?
Okay. Nice question. Did you hear a question? No. Enthusiasm can be spiritual. Enthusiasm might be coming from the mode of passion. How do I know the difference between the two? And how do I stay in spiritual enthusiasm? A little shorter than what you said, but that's what you're asking. First of all, take it for granted that there's a mix. That's fair. It's not all this or all that. There's a mix. That's for starters. So, where your enthusiasm, so a litmus test of the material kind is when the elements are in place, I'm enthusiastic. If the elements aren't fully in place, I don't have the same enthusiasm. Then another is just as she was describing. If people respond nicely, I can sustain my enthusiasm. If people don't respond nicely, I don't remain enthusiastic for too long. So it's dependent upon both, you know, from the start and the stop. If the start is impelled by material circumstance, or the flow is impeded by material circumstance, that enthusiasm is not on the spiritual platform. Another broad litmus test is, going out over time, is my attraction for enjoying things subsiding. If not, that enthusiasm is material or passion. And if it's spiritual, like inversely proportionate, the enthusiasm will diminish the allure, the glitter gold appearance of material happiness and pursuing material happiness, being enthusiastic to get that material happiness. And because the material happiness doesn't necessarily mean things, it can mean recognition, honor, praise, distinction, a pat on the head, you know, some acknowledgement of you're good. Yes, I'm good. I can continue being enthusiastic. Another symptom of spiritual enthusiasm is thinking on the platform of the soul, or even prior to that, preliminary to that, thinking of the welfare of another person. And it sustains. So above that, I will go back up again, on the platform of the soul. Thinking of the welfare of the soul. You know, because we do this often with your questions, we'll take your children. Because your life is very much absorbed in caring for your children. So, with your children, you want the best for your children. But that enthusiasm can be coming from a place of control, or vicariously enjoying through them, or not seeing them as spirit souls that have been entrusted by Krishna for you to help complete their journey further back to Godhead. So with that spiritual conception, there's the caring isn't diminished, but it's with a relaxing or a detachment from the controlling spirit and more in the serving spirit, in the mood of simply being the servant. Although you're big and they're small, you're the mother and they're the children, if your mood is I'm the servant, the reciprocation, what they'll feel is going to be different, and the reciprocation will be different because it will be more on the spiritual platform, and that will help to elevate those that you care so much about and love very deeply to the spiritual platform, which is what your goal is, your duty is. So cultivate the spiritual conception of who you are and what you're doing, the services with those who are nearest and dearest to you, and then extending that out to those who are little, you know, the community and the world and so on. And it's an ongoing cultivation of the spiritual conception of life. Enacting from that platform, acting from the soul. Serving Krishna. Anything else? Anyone else that hasn't put their hand up yet? Just see. Oh, there we go.
Day to day.
happy, how to feel dependent? Is that your question? No. Help me. Being smashed so many times.
And so, because of practicing Krishna consciousness for quite a few years, kind of our mind is thinking that, okay, you know, I need to depend on Krishna. But, and so, like, just keep going, but then there's not that active consciousness involved in that. It kind of becomes more like just mechanical.
Other goal, but other goals become connected to that goal.
Any other goal.
Not happily,
yeah.
Begrudgingly. With resignation, I guess that's all that's left for me to do. I have no other option. Like that? Well, one thing that's universal with all of us is we want to be happy. And what I'm hearing from you is that doesn't bring happiness. So, and I want to be happy. So then you have to go beyond just the behavior and, you know, the refrain that repeats itself saying, I just have to depend on Krishna, and go more deeply. Like, you know, into your feeling. One of the feelings that you just expressed is, I'm not this mechanical thing. It's not fulfilling. There's something missing. There are different things that one can do in that, from that space. Just feel that feeling. That's one thing you can do. Stay with the feeling. Like, why am I feeling this? I don't like this feeling. And stay with it. But like, oh, I shouldn't feel that feeling. It's not right. It'll lead to Krishna. Feelingly calling out for Krishna. Another is like Vyasadeva. He was feeling something's wrong. He wasn't doing something wrong, but he was feeling something's insufficient. So he asked his spiritual master. And his spiritual master said, you're not doing anything wrong, but you've not sufficiently glorified Krishna. Take that extra step. Glorify Krishna. Now, Vyasa's way of glorifying Krishna was through literature. And your way of glorifying Krishna might be some other way. But whatever that some way is, that's God's gift to you. Glorify Krishna. And what are the ways in which Krishna can be glorified? Unlimited ways. Find some of them and glorify Krishna. Not because someone is telling you you're bad if you don't glorify Krishna. That's the remedy. And start thinking of different ways to glorify Krishna and glorify Krishna. Or read those writings of those who have glorified Krishna. Or read the expressions of Kunti, who has glorified Krishna. And glorify Krishna. Recite Kunti's prayers. And as Prabhupada says, when these prayers are recited, that shouldn't be done mechanically either. It should enter into the spirit of the hymn as a regular daily function, is his teaching. A practice. In the spirit of. Then comes the yeah, but I don't have the feeling. All I'm only feeling is, you know, I'm just beaten down from all of my mistakes and imperfections and all of that. But Krishna is there. And here's another one. Associate, make a program to, like, you know, with someone. Start with your husband or a dear friend, and, you know, hear some glorification, something, 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 and help one another. I need some help with this. Please help me. I have this idea, but I know that some extra strength would really help me. So, you know, I just want to be accountable. You know, I'll report to you how I'm doing, or you help me, we'll read together, or something, something like that. Through Sangha, your strength plus another's strength. Someone that understands and you feel some confidence with, and you reach out and make that connection. And then stay with it. Like this example, you know, that Sridhar Maharaj, you know, for 4 or 5 years, staying with one thing. Don't just, like, do it 1 week and then say, oh, I'm still in the same place 1 week later. Stay with it. And in essence, message, another is, start with your chanting of the holy name. Everything begins there. Okay? Okay, last question.
I want to chant sometimes while walking.
You're not able. What happens? Your legs don't work? Really? That's a problem. Better go to a doctor.
Just only a lip movement. But if I sit and chant, that's okay.
You understand what he's asking?
Yeah.
You do. What's he asking?
He's saying he's able to chant while sitting but not while walking. So he's trying to understand. It's not like a Chinese game.
It's not that you're physically unable to walk, or that you are physically unable to walk.
Like, when I concentrate, then I see myself stopping with my breath. Or when I walk, I'm not chanting. Like, even if I'm chanting, it's just only mechanical.
Okay, so then sit and chant. But you also want to walk. So do some walking and listening, like she was saying. Sometimes listening. Sampath was saying. Do some walking and listening. And do some sitting and chanting. Okay, well, talk to him about, you know, I can't chant while I'm walking. Maybe you can put on your headphones and walk with him while he's chanting. Yeah.
I feel dependent upon some other spiritual guru other than Krishna. So is it something wrong? Or because I got peace following that spiritual guru.
Well, Krishna's, in one sense, he's Adi Guru, but he's more than Guru. He's the language in the Bhagavatam. He's Ashraya. He's the shelter of all gurus. He's the object of. He's the source of everything. So if someone is guru, they're pointing towards the object. So if Krishna is the object, then maybe you mean something different than what you're saying. Do you mean in our Sangha here, we're reading Srimad Bhagavatam as it's translated by A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, and you have a guru that's other than A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, but this other guru is also pointing to Krishna, or he's pointing to someone other than Krishna?
Yeah, he says, like, God is one, I'm the son of God. So.
God is one, meaning there are multiple names of God? Or is he God is one, meaning I'm God, you're God, we're all God? Because there are different, some people say that.
Yeah, I just say the name of the spiritual guru. Like, he always says, like, be righteous, be nice, self-realize yourself, self-purify yourself.
Mm-hmm.
So it's the same, like Krishna also told the same things, right? In Bhagavad Gita.
Well, Krishna certainly said those things, but he said more than those things. Krishna said that the final instruction, all those virtuous things, sarva dharmam prityaja, they take a secondary position to one thing, mame kam sharanam raja. All varieties of dharma are secondary to this principal essence of dharma. Mam ekam sharanam. Sharanam, you know the meaning? Surrender. Surrender to me alone. And he describes many of the things that you just described. These, he says, those who have these qualities, they're very pleasing to me. They're very dear to me. The one that's most dear is the one who understands the message of Bhagavad Gita and teaches the message of Bhagavad Gita, and the essence of that message of Bhagavad Gita is those qualities are enduring, not only endearing, but they're enduring, they sustain when one takes shelter of Krishna. That's Krishna's teaching in Bhagavad Gita. Ultimately, it's surrender to Him. Because, for example, you know, be good to other people, like this other example you gave. Of, you know, doing acts of kindness for other people. But is it not possible? I'll say it positively. It is quite possible to do an act of kindness by intention that actually misses the real point of the well-being of the other individual. Although my act of kindness was with good intention, I missed the real object, the eternal soul, and the soul's eternal relation with the Supreme, in my effort of an act of kindness. So, good intention, it isn't necessarily good enough. I learned that as a small boy. Good intention is good. Good intention is not sufficient. Good intention can cause great harm, in fact, and with all good intention. There's this saying, I don't know where it comes from, even the path to hell is paved by good intention. You've heard that one before? So, maybe have a bad consequence for another person. And even by good intention, I may do something that's beneficial for another on one level, but it's missing the eternal soul. That's something that the Bible teaches. What profiteth a man if he is given the whole world, but he loses his eternal soul? So what's the essence is how to give that essence. If you have to have received it, you have to be able to give it. Know how, what it is, and how to give it. So it's more than just acts of kindness. How do you get to that more? How do you get to the transcendental position? That's Krishna's teaching overall in Bhagavad Gita. Yes.
Being transcendent is the difference.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
To the one who are following the
Krishna consciousness. Yeah. Okay. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.
Srila Rupa Maharaj ki jai.